This drummer, he gonna send a message by drum.
Hey, Leela.
We're getting off to freedom.
Stop that.
Hey, Hannah, what are we watching?
Oh, you know this.
But don't you want to be free, Belle?
Stop all that African talk about drums and all that stuff.
Oh, yes, I recognize this. This is a scene from Roots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is hard to find a black person in America who does not like Roots. This is iconic.
Yeah, iconic.
I never tell nobody this before. Not nobody here. Before I come here, I was on another plantation. You and my first man.
But Leela, what if someone didn't like it?
What do you mean, didn't like it? Didn't like Roots?
Wait, I mean, what if someone came out and said, I hated Roots. Roots sucked.
You saying that actually just pains my soul. I mean, who would even say that?
Well, that's kind of what I want to talk about today. Do I have to like everything black all the time? And if I don't, am I a traitor?
Is feeling like some kind of way. We got to stoop this out.
Let's do it.
The stoop.
Stories from across the black diaspora
that we need to talk about.
My cousins were water and grease girls, and I couldn't be a water and grease girl.
That's what I'm talking about, ballerina in the hood.
We be Gullah Geechee United people.
When a black woman walks up to the desk in labor, what preconceived notions do you have about her?
I didn't even know we had a hair chart.
So, Leela, I think if you ask most black people whether they should support black art or black businesses or black media, they'll probably say, of course.
Yeah, you tend to get that a lot. A lot of support.
So our lovely producer, Natalie, went out to talk to some folks about this.
It is absolutely important to support black art and black businesses simply because there's not enough representation. Often, we don't see it in the mainstream. So just being able to see it and amplify it and keep it in the forefront is very important.
My opinions for supporting black products for black people, I think, is that you definitely should.
You know, we as a community, we've had so many different troubles through the years. You know, it's been 400 years since we've been here, been in this land. And, you know, we have to gather together like other ethnicities and really become more centralized. I think it would be very important.
It's important to support black-owned businesses because I get to see myself and I get to follow my own imagination.
Pretty much everyone Natalie talked to felt this way, right? Black supporting black.
Black supporting black, yes, of course.
Yeah.
I'm down with that.
Mm-hmm. But I have a question. How do we know if these people really meant what they said?
What do you mean?
I mean, when I said, what if someone said they hated Roots, you freaked out on me.
Yes.
Right? And that may just make me not want to tell you about it next time, right? If I don't like something.
Maybe.
Because of your reaction, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, this isn't about the voices we just heard, but what if some of us say we should support black businesses because that's what we're supposed to say? Mm. Or like we say we love this or that black movie, or we say we're down with this black cause, but maybe we don't really believe it.
Okay, because you've done that before? Is that what you do?
No.
You feel like that you've said you supported something and you're really actually internally hating it?
Leela, I said, what if? Okay. But since you've asked, I mean, I think I've done that before.
With what?
One thing I can think about is Anita Baker songs.
When we met, always knew I would feel that night.
I faked enjoying them.
You fake supporting the black artists. You know, you're not a fan of, of the Rapture of Love.
All respect to Anita Baker and all her fans, but it's just not me. I don't like her, the way she sings.
Okay.
And you've got to have something, Leela. You've got to have something.
I don't know if I do.
What about you?
Honestly, I mean, you're putting me on the spot here. You're asking me to say if I have something that I've actually, something blackety black that
something
I've actually.
Something black that you don't like.
That I don't like, that I publicly say, you know.
That you would say in public.
I don't really think that I do have anything negative to say about. I can't think of anything.
You can't think of anything right now, but we will get back to you, Miss Day. We'll come back to you. Right now, I want to introduce you to this man named Steven.
My name is Steven Roberts.
He lives in California in the Bay Area, but
I spent most of my adolescent years in Germany. My mom's German. My dad's black Guyanese.
So in Germany, he was living in the world of his white mother. But then Steven's family makes a big move.
When I was about 17, we moved to New York and lived with my black family.
He went to a high school that was predominantly black and Latino, and he started to notice something about himself, about the way he acted.
I noticed how in the first year, I changed how I dressed. I changed how I was talking to people. I mean, I wasn't even from New York, but I'm walking around with a Brooklyn accent. It didn't make any sense.
He didn't like the clothes, you know, he didn't like the accent he was faking. He didn't even like the music the kids were listening to, but he was still doing all those things. And there was a reason he was doing that.
I was trying to connect with people and make friends, and I didn't want to be that weird outsider kid who didn't know anything.
I get that, you know, we've all been there just trying to fit in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and kids can be mean. But then Steven grows up and he realizes.
Looking back, even when I look at pictures of myself, I'm like, that is not me. I was presenting this image of what I thought everyone else wanted to see, but I was definitely not being true to myself.
So he's pretending.
Right. And why was he pretending?
That was my way to connect. This is how the group behaves. I'm going to allow myself to be sucked in by that group.
And you know, Leela, that desire to want to be like the group surrounding you, you know, to look like the group, even if you don't really like or identify with what the group is doing, that feeling, it has a name in psychology. It's called social desirability bias.
Social desirability bias.
It's when you pretend to like or hate something because the group you belong to likes or hates it. But actually, you don't really feel that way. So like saying, I love basketball, you know, just to fit in with the neighborhood kids, when in fact, maybe you can't even stand watching a game of basketball, you know. And Steven Roberts, there's something I didn't tell you about him.
I'm a professor of psychology in the Stanford psychology department.
What?
Mm-hmm. Little Steven grew up to be Dr. Roberts, a psychology researcher. And guess what he studies?
Let me guess. Social desirability bias?
Yes.
Social desirability bias is if, for instance, you believe that society wants you to behave a certain way or respond in a certain way, in the desirable way, then you will respond in that way.
So folks want to leave a good impression.
Mm-hmm.
They want to present themselves in a very positive way. I'm not going to go against the grain. I'm not going to say the bad thing. This is what you want. This is what's desired. That's what I'm going to say. I want to look good.
And there's a reason behind that.
Because you don't want to be punished.
Punished. In what way?
Well, that is when the group drags you. I'll let Dr. Roberts put it in more scientific terms.
We're pretty good at regulating our own group members, where if someone kind of falls outside of the norm or doesn't do what the group does, we really like conformity. We kind of punish that person either verbally or sometimes in more extreme ways. But there's another motivation then for the group. If we fall out of line, the group will correct us and pull us back into the group.
Yeah. And Dr. Roberts, a.k.a. Steven, he found this out in his research. And there was this one experiment with little kids. So he made up two groups of imaginary people.
We call them Hibbles and Glurks.
Hibbles and Glurks.
Hibbles and Glurks. And so what he did was he got the kids and then he brought them these screens where there were these characters, and he introduced them to these pretend characters that showed up on their screens.
We tell them about these Hibbles and Glurks, like, oh, Hibbles speak this language, and Glurks speak that language. Hibbles eat this kind of food or listen to this kind of music, and Glurks eat this kind of food and listen to this kind of music.
So the characteristics of each group. Are you following, Lila?
Yes, yes. Hibbles and Glurks.
Okay.
Hibbles and Glurks.
Okay.
And then we'll show them a group member who goes against the group. So a Hibble who will listen to the Glurk music, for instance.
Okay, so why the Hibble gotta be like that?
Mm.
Why does that happen?
Okay, Lila, let's just focus.
Okay.
Basically what we find repeatedly, we've done it in multiple contexts in the U.S. and even in China, that young kids, they really hate it when the person goes against the group. And they'll say things like, well, you should follow your group. You're supposed to do what your group does.
So basically what these kids are saying is stick to your group.
So, Hana, then what about this idea that got us all into this? And that's what happens when we do go against the grain and go a step further and do that punishment Dr. Stevens was talking about earlier, like calling people out.
Yeah, it came up when actress Issa Rae made that famous statement at the Emmy Awards a couple of years ago.
I remember that.
Uh-huh. And last but not least, who are you rooting for tonight?
I'm rooting for everybody black. I am. Betting on black tonight.
I mean, mm-hmm. We all kind of feel that way sometimes, right? You want to root for everybody black, and that's what we're talking about, mm-hmm. to support everyone. But then if you say otherwise, like if you critique a black actor or musician, you're called a hater.
Yeah, she got people talking.
Issa Rae saying she rooting for everybody black was the worst thing possible. Now we all haters for being critical.
She said what she said. And wanting black creators to be even better is rooting for them. People just don't understand that thoughtful critique equals support.
Black art should always be supported. We can't afford not to support it.
I'm becoming annoyed because it seems like people always need to shit on things under the guise of a critical lens.
Dr. Roberts talks about this a lot, and he deals with it in his class, and he says it's complicated because he said people are reacting from a deep place of solidarity.
Historically, black Americans are a very marginalized group, a minority group, stigmatized, oppressed. And there's definitely a motivation for whenever a group is in a minority position, there's a strong motivation to want to maintain that group membership. If we don't stick together and have a cohesive set of norms, then the already marginalized group is going to become fragmented.
So, Lila, let's stay on this idea of critiquing black. Dr. Roberts was saying it's hard, right? Because you want to, as Issa Rae said, root for everybody black. But what if you have to critique because it's your job?
My name is Hanif Abdurraqib, and I'm a poet, essayist, and cultural critic from Columbus, Ohio.
Hanif reviews books and shows and movies, and he wrote this article in the magazine Pacific Standard where he reviewed the film Proud Mary. Remember that one?
Yes, yes. That was that blaxploitation action film with Taraji P. Henson.
Yeah, exactly. And it's where she plays a professional assassin, and she is bad.
What are you about to do?
You just stay in the car. Keep the doors locked, okay?
Hanif's article was called Proud Mary and the Pressure on Black Audiences to Support Black Movies.
I didn't go into Proud Mary expecting to like it, but I still wanted to support it, particularly since I paid to watch movies that it almost certainly couldn't be any worse than.
But Lila, Proud Mary was really testing his faith, and he came out in this review and just said it.
Proud Mary's not a good film.
Okay, he really didn't like that movie.
Mm-mm. I think a lot of people didn't. But the point is, he came out and wrote about it, right? Hanif says it may not seem like it, but he's actually supporting Black art when he calls it out.
I think that so much dialogue around Black people in Black film particularly is rooted in support. Well, we have to go support this. We have to go make this successful. And that just doesn't happen as often with other films, right? I don't know if like white people were encouraging, rounding up the masses to go make Phantom Thread a hit, you know? So, you know, like I don't feel beholden to that unless I am excited about the film. And I think, you know, this is kind of an age-old concept, but equality in some ways when it comes to consumption of media means having some stuff that you look at and say, I just don't, that's not for me, and being okay with that.
And he says he's seeing a lot of folks saying this particular thing that he thinks is problematic.
It's this idea that if we don't support this, we'll never get another shot again.
Yeah, I've read that perspective. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and he says that kind of talk can put an end to constructive criticism like his. And speaking of constructive criticism, he tries to stay away from social media.
Yeah, I mean, I think my feelings of disappointment have best been worked out in actual real life conversation with other Black folks or other marginalized folks, right? Like, I think specifically taking those disappointments to Twitter doesn't feel like a really good place to have discourse mm-hmm. that makes sense. Because then your disappointment is put up against the perceptions of if this film, book, whatever is not successful, we'll never get another one. And I think that has to become less prominent. We are now where Black art is more robust, it is more varied, it is looked at from different angles. That gives people an opportunity to say, no, I'm going to sit this one out, but something for me could be coming later.
So Hannah, is Hanif saying because there's more and better Black art that we can afford to not support every single thing that comes out? Is that what he's saying?
Yeah, but he's also saying we shouldn't be making a bunch of mediocre stuff and being okay with it just because it's Black.
None of us are served by hyping up a bad film just because there are Black people in it or because a Black person made it. That doesn't really serve anyone. It doesn't serve the creators. It doesn't serve the consumers. It doesn't paint a fair picture of what is fully possible for a film. And so I think there's some checking of myself in that I don't want to push a quote-unquote Black film harder critically than I would any other film or music or anything. I want to hold it to the same critical standard of my own personal taste that I would hold anything else to.
And Hanif has this concept called criticism with generosity.
What does that mean?
I think that a big problem with criticism is that folks don't do it with generosity on their mind often, especially if it's something that can change in the future, you know, starting from a point of, I really wanted to see this happen and it didn't happen, or I really was rooting for this and it didn't come through. And so here's what I am hoping for. If we're talking about Proud Mary by itself, I think critiquing Proud Mary, it was important to say, I think this stumbled as an action film, like just as a film. As an entertaining action film, this failed a bit. But that doesn't mean that it failed like all Black people, you know?
All right, so Leela, it's one thing to review a film. It's a single action by an individual. One person just does that. But what if there was something much bigger at stake?
Like what? Tell me.
Like the leadership of the United States.
I think I know where you're going with this. I'm not sure how I feel.
Okay.
What are you talking about?
Well, you know, the pressure to vote Black. When you're Black, it's a big pressure.
Mm-hmm.
Let's watch this video.
I am proud to announce that we have over 300 people that have put their names on the line for Senator Warren. So what about you? Are you all in?
So this is a rally for presidential candidate Elizabeth Warren. It happened in late November.
Oh, that was in Atlanta, right? It was really big. A lot of Black people were there.
Mm-hmm. That woman speaking is Angela Peoples. She's from a group called Black Women For, and they endorsed Senator Warren. And you see that woman on the left of the stage right there?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
That's Tracy Corder. She's from Oakland.
I also want to meet that older couple that was here.
And I met up with Tracy at the Oakland office of the Warren campaign. She was chatting with campaign workers about how to get the black vote out for Warren.
If you see this button I have on, people can't see it, but it's Black Women with Warren, and it's from a big rally she had in Atlanta, at Clark Atlanta, and it was about the valuing the work of black women.
So we talked about reactions to her and their group endorsing Warren.
When Black Women Four put out our endorsement, folks were mad that we endorsed not the black woman, right? I would say what I saw in my mentions was mostly about, like, you should support the black candidate. I have learned to turn off notifications for people who don't follow me. So that's been a Twitter, like, hack in heaven for me.
Because Tracy and her team had to deal with black Twitter.
I engage back and forth with folks who put out good faith critique. So if people are saying, you know, I actually don't trust her on Medicare for All, I'll engage around that, right? If people are saying you're a sellout because you did whatever, that's somebody I just don't engage with, right? So if people want to have conversations about issues and like real concerns, like I'm down to do that if I have the time online. But if it's something that no matter what I say, you just want to argue, I'm the oldest of a set of children. I learned very early not to engage on that.
And for those folks that she felt were genuinely, like, concerned, she would tell them.
That just having folks who look like you in office is not enough. Like, everybody doesn't share experiences. Everybody doesn't share ideology. And so just saying, a black person is there, we won, is actually not okay and not enough. We actually have to have a collective agenda. And we actually have to talk about how we want that person to show up.
And this was happening especially with Kamala Harris's supporters. It's like there was this expectation that a black woman would support the black woman candidate. And Tracy says she gets that.
There was obviously a pressure to support Kamala, for sure, because it's a black woman and you want to see her do well. Like, no matter how I felt about her record, seeing a black woman on stage holding her own was important. It was important for my niece, who was 11, to see. And I think it made my mom really proud. But ultimately, for me, the representation of it all wasn't enough. I needed somebody who was actually lined up for the issues that I cared about.
But Leela, there's a twist. Guess what?
Okay, what? What's the twist?
Tracy's black family and black friends actually weren't leaning towards any of the black candidates.
I would say the biggest pushback I have had is not about Elizabeth Warren in regards to Cory Booker or Kamala. It's really been in regards to Joe Biden.
Biden?
You know, folks really feel like that was Barack's right-hand man and they were best friends. They were eating ice cream together and making friendship bracelets.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so... like, to them, he was the quote-unquote black choice because he was associated with Obama.
So favorite by association, even though he isn't black.
Yeah, the Obama effect. And, like, it is real. Polls keep showing that Biden has strong support from black voters, especially older black voters.
So the group has spoken, yeah?
Yeah. And you know how folks were pressuring Tracy to support Kamala? Well, she was in the thick of campaigning for Warren, convincing folks why Kamala isn't right for them. And then something happened.
We have breaking news right now that we've just gotten. Kamala Harris is dropping out of the presidential race. We have just received that news right now. Kamala Harris.
The day I met up with Tracy, it was the day Kamala Harris dropped out of the race.
So here's the deal, guys. My campaign for president simply does not have the financial resources to continue.
Wow. Yeah, okay. So a major rival dropping out. So she must have been relieved.
Well, Tracy was feeling something, but it wasn't joy.
When I saw today that Kamala Harris had dropped out, I had a reaction that I wasn't expecting because she had never been my candidate, right? But what I thought about, it was a pause.
So she wasn't going to vote for her, but she still felt that little bit of, you know, like heartbreak, right? For a black woman down.
Yeah, it still hurt.
It still hurt.
I don't think the media has been fair to her. To see people so publicly trash her from her campaign and to see that get picked up by media, that to me means that they don't feel like she has that power. That to me means that they feel like they can throw this Black woman under the bus and that's okay because they'll be fine with their jobs regardless. And so that I think was a real slap in the face around like what it means to be a powerful person. So I cannot support you and also still see how you've been treated unfairly.
And so guess what Tracy spent that day doing?
Today, I spent the day talking to other Black women and uplifting her staff who did an amazing job. I think my strategy is just like loving on the Black women and Black folks who worked for Kamala.
So she reached out. That's some political maturity right there.
Yeah, Tracy found a way to like support Black women and keep campaigning for her candidate all at the same time. And Leela, this approach reminds me of something Dr. Stephen Roberts told me.
Why? Are we going to talk about Hibbles and Clerks again? We going there again?
No, we're Hibbles not. And he analyzes this kind of situation because a similar one happened to him in his class.
In one of my classes, we recently discussed the Black Klansmen. And people were super critical and thought it was racist, which I disagree with. But we also had a conversation of, well, how often do you see a film written, produced, and directed by a Black filmmaker? That's also something to be celebrated. And we could sit here and talk about the negatives as much as we want. And we should, you know, be critical about it. But at the same time, we also maybe want to spend some time being uplifting, right? I think.
What was the response to that?
I think it was...
Was it like an either or? You can't be both? You can't do both at the same time?
Yeah. No, you're right. I think we try to have the come to the conclusion that it's important to do both. And we like to use the sandwich method. You know, you start off with a positive, then hit them with a little criticism, and then end on a positive note. Don't just be critical all the time. Because again, society is very, I think, critical of Black people all the time in all spaces. We as in-group members can do that as well. But I think we also have an obligation to the group to be uplifting. But that again gets back to that desirability, that conformity, that group pressure. Maybe we don't. Maybe that's my own bias, you know? Maybe I'm part of the problem, but it's complicated.
Okay, that's interesting that you can critique but still be uplifting. I like that. I like that a lot. I think it's like that generosity that Hanif was talking about earlier.
Yeah, we can agree, we can critique and seemingly, quote, break from the group as Dr. Roberts was talking about. Mm. But in the end, we can still have each other's backs. And that happens all the time.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the stoop.
Whoa. Uh-uh.
Yeah, that's the stoop.
That is not the stoop.
It sure is.
No.
That's a wrap.
I didn't forget, Leela. I didn't forget. We got to go back to that question at the beginning of the show where I was asking you if there's something that you don't like that you feel Black Twitter will come at you for.
Or anyone for that matter. Just, you know, yeah, I know. I'm trying to avoid it. But I know we've gone back and forth on this a lot, you know, talking about what is it? What's the thing? And a part of me is like, in public, Hannah, I am rooting for everybody Black.
Okay.
That's what I'm doing, you know? I am. It's like, I also feel that we have few opportunities to be in these spaces. And then when we are, it's hard for me to be critical in public.
Okay.
I know. I need to work on this. So,
but
now,
what
in private...
About- Okay.
In private is another story. You know, I'll tell you. But I guess you could say that I guess you could say that it's something to think about more. How can we become more critical and still be supportive, right?
Yeah. I mean, because if we aren't critical at all, how do things get better? So come on, Leela, come on.
Okay. So this is what I'll do. I'll do this for you. Mm-hmm. You want it, I'll give it to you.
Okay.
I'm going to say four things, and half of them I'm not down with, okay?
Okay, I'll take
four,
it.
Four people, okay. Dave Chappelle, the Madea movies, Tiffany Haddish, and Mos Def, a.k.a. Yasiin Bey.
So four things.
Yeah.
Two you're not down with.
Uh-huh.
And you're not going to tell us what they are?
Girl, you got to guess. I'm mysterious like that. I'll keep
you're just
guessing.
You're just going to keep us guessing?
That's right. And that's The Stoop from y'all.
The Stoop family includes editor Allison McAdam, assistant producer Natalie Peart, sound design by Seth Samuel, episode art by Nima Iyer, and music by Dawood Anthony.
Thanks to Christine James, Sydney James, Allison Skiplin, and Shannon Swift for lending us their thoughts.
Thanks to Damian D. Minor, Janae Darden, and Mazen Jamal. Support for The Stoop comes from California Humanities, a nonprofit member of the NEH. Find them at calhum.org. Special thanks to the NPR Story Lab. Our radio home is KALW.
And remember that we have a new podcast called Stoop Talks on a new platform called Luminary. And you can find me and Hana there having conversations about blackness with people like, who are we talking to, Hana?
Jemele Hill, Killer Mike, and lots more. So make sure to subscribe on the Luminary app. Lila, is it Tiffany Haddish?
No, girl.
Is it Dave Chappelle?
You better guess.
Mos Def?
Keep going.
All right. Bye.